You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. In the 3 weeks leading up to the primary election, we're taking time to better understand candidates in key races. That includes California Senate seat, the top two vote-getters on March 5th move on to the general election in November. The four leading candidates are Democratic Congress members Adam Schiff, Barbara Lee, and Katie Porter, as well as Republican and former baseball great Steve Garvey. We reached out to all four of them to join us on Insight. Earlier this week, we aired our conversation with Congressmember Adam Schiff. Today, we're going to hear from Representative Katie Porter on what her priorities, if elected, would be as California's next senator. Representative Porter, thank you for making the time on Insight.
I'm excited to be in conversation with you.
So as you are well aware, we're less than a month to the primary. And I'm curious, there have already been some debates with you and your Democratic colleagues, as well as Republican candidate Mr. Garvey. When it comes to your Democratic opponents, who are also congressional colleagues, what do you want voters to know about what distinguishes you from Adam Schiff and Barbara Lee?
Well, I've spent my career taking on powerful interests who cheat families, and I can't be bought. I think one real difference in this race is that I'm the only elected official who has never taken corporate PAC money. I'm the only one who refuses donations from federal lobbyists and doesn't take donations from executives at big pharma and big banks and big oil. And so I think those, how I've run my campaigns, are really directly related to why I have fought so fiercely and so successfully for ordinary Californians in the Congress, tackling problems like inflation, pushing to address issues like the rising cost of housing and the high cost of childcare.
Hmm. How does that translate down to votes? I mean, the three of you often vote in line with each other. If you're elected as California senator, where will you make the most difference?
So I have my background as a consumer advocate, and I have really seen how the big banks and Wall Street have shaped Washington's the way that Washington has engaged with the issue of housing and housing affordability. The homelessness crisis that we're seeing and experiencing in California is a direct result of the federal government failing to put out any meaningful housing policy for really the last 80 years. So I've released my Housing for All plan. It is a 10-point plan to try to increase homeownership opportunities for California, bring down rental costs, and increase the supply of housing all across the state at different price points. Mm.
Given that 10-point plan, I mean, that was just released this week, and we did receive it, the Housing for All plan. When it comes to voters, people who are dealing with this, with struggling with the cost of living, struggling with having a roof over their head, if you're elected senator next year, when would they see the most tangible effects of this plan?
So I think that the federal government's most important role here is to really unleash the private capital through a government backstop. And that is something that could be done very quickly. The federal government right now already backstops 30-year mortgages for people who can afford California homes. We need to federally backstop loans and programs that with down payment assistance, for example, for those who can't afford housing at our price. And we need to, most of all, get that private capital directed toward building housing for our workforce and for our future. We are graduating people from our amazing state universities who are exiting the state because of the cost of housing. And so that change, getting that private capital pointed toward building housing that is affordable for workers, is something that could happen within a year. You could start to see a big uptick in private construction, and that would drive down the cost of housing for all of us.
There has long been the criticism that California is expensive to build in. It is costly and it is time consuming, which also has a dollar sign attached to that. How do you streamline that?
So we absolutely need to knock down local barriers. And we have seen folks like our Attorney General, Rob Bonta, who's supporting me in this race, really use the law enforcement angle, kind of the stick, to kind of punish jurisdictions, localities that are not doing their part in building housing for our workers and for our state. But I think we also need the federal government to come in on the other side of that and say, look, if you're going to break down these local barriers, parking requirements and restrictions around construction that are just designed to prevent there from being adequate housing, if you're willing to knock those down, we're going to help fund the construction that your community needs to grow and to thrive.
I want to get to crime, because according to the Public Policy Institute of California, the state's violent crime rate has increased compared to pre-COVID. And this is also a national trend. It's not isolated to just California. It is still well below like a third of the peak in the early 1990s. But what is your role as a senator if you are elected? Do you see this more of a state or a local issue? What role does the federal government have?
Well, public safety is a core function of government, and the federal government definitely has a role to play here in making sure that we are doing the research on what works to prevent crime and how we can best solve crime. We are seeing an uptick in organized criminal enterprises, transnational criminals. That's what's fueling the majority of fentanyl violence, some of these higher profile, more organized instances of retail theft, and that's going to require federal government expertise to address those crimes and to solve them and to bring those criminals to justice.
Another big issue in this state is homelessness. Of course, it is tied to housing as well. It's also tied to mental health. California's unhoused population is the largest in the country. Here in Sacramento County, it reached a record, a 67% increase from the latest point in time count to the previous point in time count. How do you intend to address issues like homelessness? I mean, an unprecedented amount of money, billions and billions of dollars, has already been devoted to this. And I think for a lot of people in this state, it doesn't feel like there is a dent being made to this crisis.
So the solutions, once someone is experiencing chronic street homelessness, it is very, very expensive, as we are learning so painfully as taxpayers and as citizens, to try to get them into permanent supportive housing and keep them housed. And so I think that the federal government needs to be part of picking up the price tag there and for building that permanent supportive housing, because it is much cheaper to have someone be housed and be stable, getting the services they need, than to have them on the street, where they take away from our law enforcement's ability to fight crime, where they can overwhelm our emergency rooms for chronic health care. But the reality is, part of the reason we're not making progress is that we are not stopping and slowing down people from becoming homeless. Until we address the root cause, which is that full-time, hardworking families in California cannot afford to keep a roof over their head, then we are just going to see this problem. Even as we get one person successfully off the street and into housing, we're going to see another one come. Mental health is something I've done a lot on in Congress. It continues to be a top priority of mine. I think that, you know, Governor Newsom's care court system, which is rolling out across the state right now, I've been in conversation already, seeing and learning how that's working in these pilot counties, because we really do need to connect people to these services. And the sooner we can do it, the better, because that is where our tax dollars can make the most of, have the most effect. But it's also where we can really prevent people from experiencing some of the worst harms of being unhoused or not receiving mental health care.
Yeah, I mean, another issue that's tied to this is the cost of living in California, including inflation, which I know is national. But California is already one of the most expensive places to live in the country. We have among the highest gas prices, taxes, as well as real estate. What tangible policies do you propose to address this cost of living issue, to address inflation and its impact on Californians?
Well, for a lot of families, the biggest costs are housing, as you mentioned. That's the number one. For those who have young children, childcare, where the federal government also, as with housing, career politicians, decade after decade, have not done anything to invest in childcare. Every economist, from left to right, Republican to Democrat, will say that investing in bringing down the cost of childcare would grow our economy. And it would be an investment to do that. But I'm a single mom. I'm raising three kids. I understand firsthand how hard it is to find childcare and how much we need help in doing that. And so I think those are some of the big cost chunks. In terms of things like food, gas, we have a real problem here with monopoly power. And we saw that during the pandemic, and I called this out in Congress, actually, that about half, a little over half, actually, of the increased prices we paid were coming directly from corporate price gouging and monopoly power. They were not coming from supply chain or from higher labor costs. And so we need more competition in our economy. And that is the federal government's job, to enforce those antitrust laws, because they hurt us all as consumers and shoppers.
California has long been, or touted itself when it comes to California leaders, as a leader, as a nation state, as I think Governor Newsom has said many times. You know, we're the fifth largest economy in the world, and one of the most ambitious things that the state is doing comes down to addressing climate change, zero emissions, and these very ambitious climate goals, such as transitioning to electric vehicles or relying more on the grid. That's all costly for a lot of people. What can you do if elected as senator to offset what Californians would have to shoulder for this transition?
Well, our California senator ought to be a fighter, making sure that the federal government is rewarding states like California, who have been kind of at the tip of the spear in making the changes necessary to prevent, to slow down climate change and prevent some of the harms of climate change. I think one of the things that we've seen is, you know, this Inflation Reduction Act that was a big part of the Democrats' agenda, and I proudly voted for it. Where are those investments going? Are they going to states like Alabama and places like that? Or are they coming here to California, where we have shown already that we are part of the solution? And so I do think that's part of what we need to do. I think we also have to recognize that the cost of inaction on climate is crippling. So in 2021, it cost taxpayers $145 billion to deal with the wildfires, the floods, the weather and climate related disasters. And so there is a real cost of inaction here that we have to also measure. But there's no doubt that California has led the way here, and the federal government ought to be incentivizing other states to follow California's example and rewarding Californians who have put their tax dollars to work and made difficult decisions to try to address climate change, which is to the benefit of all Americans and really the entire world.
Pretty much all the issues that we have talked about so far, it is tied to funding. And I want to get to earmarks, because you're well known for your opposition to earmarks in legislation. I don't think it's a widely known word, earmarks. I mean, it's essentially when a lawmaker can designate some funding for their district. I mean, your Democratic opponents, Congress members Lee and Schiff, they argue that just leaves money on the table for their own constituents. Can you explain why you believe that earmarks aren't beneficial for your constituents if it could help issues such as homelessness, housing, and even climate goals?
Earmarks drive corruption, and they create inherent conflicts of interest. Look, make no mistake, California needs a warrior in Washington. We need somebody who recognizes that we are sending tax dollars to our nation's capital, and we are not getting what we need back from Washington, not on housing, not on climate, not on childcare. And so it's really, really important that we are fierce in terms of our advocacy for California's needs. But earmarks don't do that, and they especially don't do that in the Senate. And two reasons. People may have heard of the Bridge to Nowhere, the infamous earmark that was a bridge in Alaska that was millions and millions of dollars to pay for a tiny bridge to connect a tiny community. These are pet projects, and they are driven by personal relationships. They are driven by donor relationships, and they are driven by kind of curing political favor. And so we need people who are going to invest in California and get our tax dollars working for us here. But the way to do that is to focus on the needs of the entire state and the fact that we in California are a large state and our needs are large. Look, each state gets two senators, but we don't need just 1/50th of the federal tax resources. There are 39.5 million people in California, and we need a proportional share, you know, 12, 13% of our tax of the federal budget coming right back here to California. We're not going to get that through earmarks. It actually shortchanges both large states like California, and it shortchanges states with communities of color like California. And so earmarks do not work well for a state like ours. And I'm in this race for one reason, which is to be a champion for improving the lives of Californians.
California is also relatively unique with a group of other states in that it shares a border with Mexico. And when it comes to immigration, an immigration bill negotiated this week by a group of bipartisan senators, it didn't move forward. And I don't think that's necessarily surprising, given that comprehensive immigration reform has just been elusive for decades. I mean, it's easy to Monday quarterback and assign blame, but if you become senator, where do you see yourself most effective with immigration? Where can you make the biggest dent?
Well, we need to get Americans of all political backgrounds and opinions to understand the economic reality, which is that immigration helps our economy grow. And to do that, we need to have a lawful and orderly and humane immigration system. The chaos that we're seeing at the border, that is expensive. That is a real challenge for border communities, for our federal government, for the people who do that work of safeguarding our border. And so I think that it's time to look past whose fault this is and recognize who's hurt by the failure of career politicians decade after decade to deliver on immigration. It's not Democrats or Republicans, it's all of us are hurt by this. We're spending tax dollars on the border that could be directed to other important needs, mental health, homelessness, and we're not getting the workforce here on the ground that we need to have our economy in the United States continue to grow and to be globally competitive. And so I think it's time to stop pointing fingers at each other and instead recognize that we are actually all in this together. Everyone benefits from that strong, stable economy, and immigrants are part of how we get there.
So in the spirit of we're all in this together, bipartisanship is strained, and to say the least. How do you work across the aisle so that bills become law? How do you compromise with colleagues who you have strong ideological differences with?
Yeah, I have terrific bipartisan relationships, and I'm so proud to have so many bipartisan bills that have become law and that I've introduced just this week. On Tuesday, my Vote by Mail Tracking Act, which passed out of the Oversight Committee 44-0. It was unanimous. Every single Republican supported this bill. This is the Oversight Committee, the committee that has been engaged in some of the worst partisan battles about Hunter Biden and about the border and other controversial topics. So I'm really proud of being someone who's willing to walk up to anyone to have a conversation. I've done work with Representative Doug LaMalfa, a Republican from Northern California, on what we're going to do about wildfire homeowners insurance, given wildfires. I've done work on cracking down on scam PACs with other Republicans. And so I have really had strong bipartisan relationships. But I think the key is to approach these people on the issues that affect California, that affect our communities. It's not about Democrats and Republicans scoring points. It is about winning for everyday Americans. That's the game that we're playing. And to the extent that people are engaged in partisanship instead of that, it's shortchanging everyone.
A vote as a senator also shapes our relationships internationally with other countries. And we have just crossed a marker 4 months, the start of the war between Israel and Hamas. Can you clarify your stance on this war? I mean, the death toll in Gaza, I believe, surpasses 27,000 people. As we know, majority are women and children. Displacement is at 85%. Starvation is increasing. Where do you stand on this issue to get to a resolution that benefits innocent lives?
Yeah, what's happening in Gaza is heartbreaking. What happened in Israel on October 7th is heartbreaking. We should all want a lasting ceasefire in Gaza, an end to this conflict. And this is a war between Israel and Hamas. And so the role of the United States here is to identify and push for the conditions where a ceasefire is going to be possible. That means making sure that we're advocating for the release of hostages, that we're making sure that we have a plan to invest in rebuilding Gaza following this conflict, both the infrastructure of Gaza, the housing and the infrastructure, but also making sure that Gazans are able to, the Palestinians are able to rule of themselves, to have an independent state. And so, you know, I think the United States needs to push for a rapid end to this conflict. And I think that it can do so in a way that will leave Israel more secure from the kinds of horrible terrorist actions that Hamas and other groups took.
In the last minute or two that we have, as I mentioned, we're just a couple weeks to the primary. And as I know you're well aware, California is a top two state. That means there could be two Democrats on the ballot. But current polls have Congress member Schiff in the lead with you and Steve Garvey actually tied for second. And Garvey is a Republican, of course. I mean, polls, I know they're not the end all be all, but they are a useful snapshot. What does it tell you that you are tied with Garvey?
Well, Mr. Garvey has a lot of name recognition from his playing baseball in the 70s and 80s here in California. And so, I think we are running a campaign that is about connecting with everyday Californians. This is a moment in which people want experienced leadership. I think I have the exact right blend of having gone to Washington, shown a willingness to take on big corporations that are hurting Californians, and also being willing to kind of bring a fresh perspective. I'm raising three school-aged children right here in California. I understand firsthand the challenges of everyday Californians, and I am squarely focused on the future. And so I'm willing to kind of shake up what has not been working in Washington in order to get things working for us. And I think that really sets me apart both from Representative Schiff and from Mr. Garvey.
What impact do you think the presidential race has had on the race for California Senate?
I think Californians here really understand that this is a choice about our state, about where Washington is leaving California behind. There's obviously many things that President Biden has accomplished. I mentioned tackling inflation, breaking up monopolies, investing in clean energy. There's a number of things that he's delivered on that I think are important for us to campaign on. But I think we also have to be willing to recognize where Washington has fallen short. President Biden himself put forth a plan that called for a big investment in housing and reducing homelessness. He called for a big investment in reducing the cost of childcare. And it's Congress, it's leaders, it's career politicians, Democrat and Republican, who failed to deliver on an agenda from our president that actually would have brought down costs for everyday Californians.
Finally, if you are elected senator and if President Trump becomes president, do you see a way where the two of you could have a productive relationship?
President Trump is having, I don't see a personal path there. I am very concerned about President Trump's law breaking and his record of corruption and self-dealing and his unwillingness to kind of put the interests of our democracy first and foremost ahead of his own personal interests time and time again. But in terms of policy, look, when President Trump ran, he said he wanted to invest in infrastructure and he said he wanted to bring down the cost of prescription drugs. To be clear, he didn't do either of those things. Joe Biden did, but those were goals, of course, that I think all of us as Americans should support.
Representative Porter, thank you for the time.
Thank you so much.
That is Representative Katie Porter. Our conversation was recorded last week. We're also planning on speaking with Congressmember Barbara Lee at the end of the month, and we are still waiting to hear back from Republican Senate candidate Steve Garvey after multiple attempts to book him for Insight. We will keep you posted. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.